Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
Welcome to the night, volume 2, story number 1. Me and my sister called it the 1817 place. That was the address, but it was over 150 years old. I was 12 and Jessie, she was 14, and we were really scared of this place. My mom never believed us, but we know she saw things. Here's the thing, we always slept together even though we had our own rooms, because it was so frightening just to be there. We always heard loud noises coming from the attic that were definitely not raccoons or squirrels, you know what I mean. And you could always feel a presence in the house at all times. My first experience was when I was sleeping in my mom's room. Her bed was on the floor next to her door, which was right next to the stairway. And just as I was falling asleep, I heard loud clunking on the wooden stairs, just like when I walk down the stairs in my boots now. The second experience was Jessica's. She was sitting on her bed reading. All of our beds were on the floor, and there was a chair right next to her, which was empty. But she looked up and there was a girl in yellow pajamas sitting in her chair. The girl had what looked like a cut going all the way around her throat. She proceeded to tell Jess about herself and her death. I don't remember how old she was. She told Jess that she and her baby sister had been killed by their father. She was strangled and her sister was shot. I don't remember anything being said about the mother, but it might have been. The thing is that her father's room turned out to be mine. The third experience was of me and my older sister, Frankie. We were all sitting in the living room when we heard a baby crying, and there were no babies in the house. We went to the stairs because it was coming from upstairs, and when we got to the bottom of the stairs, we saw an infant crawling along the threshold of Jess's room. It crawled from her room to the bathroom, looked up, turned around, and came back. When she turned, we saw a gaping bloody hole in her abdomen, staining the blue gown that she was wearing with blood. The fourth experience was mine. I was sitting halfway out of the window, smoking a cigarette. Yeah, I was a bad kid. When I looked back into my room, there was a man standing there with the scariest looking face I've ever seen in my life. He had a double-barrel shotgun cocked in his left arm. You know, like open and waiting to be loaded. He was wearing overalls, a white undershirt and boots. And when he turned his head, the image resonated, like didn't completely move with him fast enough. He just looked at me and said, "Get out of my goddamn house," and left. I don't know what the hell went on there. I've not experienced anything like it before or after, and hope not to. Maybe we all just saw what our imaginations wanted us to, but personally, I couldn't hallucinate it if I tried. I'm too skeptical, and it halts me spiritually, but the things that happened there were strong enough for quite a few people to see. Who knows if we even believe it ourselves, but we saw what we saw and heard what we heard. And that's my story. Story number 2. While I was in college, I lived in a college apartment for 1 year. I don't think it was a very old apartment building, and if anyone had ever died there, I was certainly unaware. I had 3 roommates, 2 of whom had lived there the previous year. The girl in the bedroom right next to mine moved in at the same time as I did. Once we moved in, some strange things started happening. The other 2 roommates had said that nothing like this had ever happened before. It started with the TV in the living room. The 4 of us were sitting on the couch watching TV. The remote was sitting under the table that the TV was on, upside down. The back was off of the remote, so we could see that there were no batteries in it. The volume on the TV was a little too low, and I commented on it, asking anyone to turn it up. Of course, we were all too lazy to do it, so we just sat there. However, the volume bar on the TV started to go up, and remarkably stopped at a comfortable volume. We were all pretty spooked, but it didn't scare us too much. After some discussion, we had decided that if our apartment was haunted, it was probably haunted by either a kind spirit or one with a sense of humor. After that, I started hearing strange noises at night. Not like noises you would expect to hear in a college apartment complex, but very mechanical ticking noises. The part that really got me, though, only happened one night in my bedroom. I was in bed in the dark, trying to get to sleep, when I heard a loud thud on the wall behind my head. Immediately after that, the following things happened in a perfect clockwise circular pattern around my room. The mirrored door in my closet shook. Right after it shook, my bedroom doorknob, just to the right of it, began turning rapidly. That stopped, and my bathroom doorknob, just to the right of my room door, turned rapidly. After that, my VCR, which was to the right of my bathroom, turned on and then off by itself. The window to the right of the VCR then began to shake. Then the thud behind me again. This circle went round 3 times and then stopped. I had no idea what was going on, and I had absolutely no explanation as to what was making the noises. Nobody else had any experiences in their bedrooms, and I didn't have any more after that. But the TV in the living room was still affected. I've long moved out since then, but I still think it was an interesting story. And that's all I wanted to remain. A story never repeated. Next story. When I was in college in the early 1990s, I had an experience driving home around 1 or 2 a.m. on Interstate 694 in the eastern suburbs of St. Paul, Minnesota. It was late, and I was essentially alone in the middle lane of a multi-lane southbound freeway. There were no other cars within several hundred yards of me. Without warning or any on or off ramps, a car suddenly appeared within feet of my rear bumper with headlights shining brightly in my rearview mirror. I was immediately concerned about gang activity or other potential dangers, but I could not exit the freeway, so I simply kept driving. After several seconds of the car literally being 4 to 5 feet behind me, it violently swerved to the right-hand lane to my right and pulled alongside of me. I cannot remember the exact type of car, but I do remember vividly the dark color and beat-up appearance, along with the words, "The Beast," written into the driver's side door. I also remembered that the driver of the vehicle looked like a much bigger, more evil-looking version of Marilyn Manson. Now I was frightened, but I didn't know what to do, as I had no way to exit the freeway. I just kept driving. After several seconds, the car promptly braked and got directly behind my car again. And after a few seconds of tailgating me, again with no on or off ramps available, the car just disappeared. The freeway had lots of light poles in that stretch of road, so I know it was not simply an issue of the car turning off its headlights, as you would still have been able to see other vehicles in front or behind you. The car was simply gone. To this day, I have not been able to explain the experience. Next story. This story isn't about me. It's about my friend's encounter. My friend Matt was talking to his girlfriend outside of his house at night. Because it was cold out, he decided to sit in his car in the driveway. So he went and sat in the passenger seat. As he was talking to his girlfriend, he glanced into the rearview mirror of his car. What happened next, he swears, is true, and I believe him. He said he saw an old man in the back seat of the car. He didn't recognize him at all, but he told me he could still remember his face as clear as day. He described him as pale. He had a narrow nose, he was clean-shaven, with dark eyes, almost black-looking. So he turned around to look back, but nothing was there. That is when he became frightened and jumped out of the car. He ran into the house. When he looked back into the car while running, he saw the man's face pressed against the glass, staring right at him. So he ran back to tell his parents, who didn't believe him at all. And this is where the story gets interesting. He went back to look into the car the next morning, and the seatbelts in the back were buckled up. He also noticed that the rearview mirror was tilted in a different direction, so he decided to do a little research about his car. He found out that his parents actually bought it from a man they were good friends with, and it turns out the man's father died from a heart attack in the backseat of that very car they had purchased. So Matt asked if they could get a picture of the man's father, and it turned out that they did. I was actually at his house at the time he saw the picture, and when I saw his eyes meet the photograph, his jaw dropped and his eyes widened. I took a look at the photo, and it looked just as Matt had described him. The man in the picture looked exactly the same, down to every last detail. After that picture, his parents fully believed him, although they did keep the car. Ever since that night, however, he hasn't seen the old man in the mirror again. Next story. A couple of years ago, I ran across an old Ouija board dated 1919. I remember how fascinated I was with an experience when I was about 10, so I thought that this board game would be fun to fool around with again. My son, when he was very young, told me about looking out his bedroom window and seeing three glowing figures coming from the field towards his window one night. He also stated they even entered his room and stood at the foot of his bed. He covered his head with the blankets, thinking they would go away, and when he uncovered his head, they were still there. Then they vanished. I attributed this to a bad dream at the time. There's this old beautiful house on my property built in 1926. The builder also signed and dated his name in the rafters in the attic. Cool, I thought, that he took so much pride in his work like an artist to do such a thing. Anyway, we were in his old house working the Ouija thing and so forth. My son asked me to see if what he saw was real or not. We got an answer and a lot more. The two people who were at the board knew nothing about this. In fact, they did not know the name of the road we lived on or anything else much about this neck of the woods. I asked if there were any ghosts who wanted to speak, and to be honest, I wasn't taking it seriously. Yes, replied the board. Who are you? I asked. Anna Mills, was the reply. As our guests worked the Ouija board, why are you here? I asked, and the planchette began to move quickly. I died here on the Munger Shaw Road. Our guest didn't even know the name of this road. How? I inquired. Truck, the board answered. How? I asked. Run over, Anna replied. When? 1936. At this point, I was having fun with this game. I did not take it at all seriously. After all, this thing is just a game. So, if this is all true, where is your body so that I can bring you some flowers? I jokingly asked. Her answer sent chills down my spine. You are there, she answered. What do you mean? Scattered. Which was misspelled by an 8-year-old, she said. My ashes are scattered where your trailer house is, she added. She gave us a lot of information that night. She is with two uncles who are elusive but protecting her. She was visiting them when her death occurred. Things have happened after that as well then. When I first put the trailer house where it is, now abandoned for I'm living in the old house, my ex-wife and I heard the distinctive voice of a child crying. That I can say without a doubt. My ex also told me that she saw a small girl one night fleeing out the door, and then, to be honest, I blew her off. And so did I, though, one night when I woke up to use the bathroom, you know, through the corner of the eye. I attributed this to late-night, half-asleep stuff. We did the Ouija board again, with two other people, again, the same conversation with this Anna Mills. I cannot find any records of her existence to her anywhere, though. Then again, out here in the sticks, especially back in the 30s, records may not have been critical. Heck, I know a guy that have two people buried in his front yard from back then. That's in the days when they did things like that. I did ask her who her two uncles were, and she remained elusive on that info. Okay, I know all this sounds really weird, and I didn't believe a thing about all of this until about a year ago. I went for a walk, as often done, and I walked across the field on a winter moonlit night. On my way back, I distinctly saw two people sneaking around the trailer. Thinking that someone was trying to break in, I approached one of them. I yelled out to them, what did they want? Ready to confront the intruders. I swear that I was within 15 feet of the guy, wearing a plaid shirt with bib overalls, when he took an abrupt right turn and went right through the wall of the trailer house, right below my son's old bedroom. I could see each and every detail of his face and the texture of his clothes. He looked just like a real person that would appear under a full-lit moon. I stopped dead in my tracks, but somehow I was not frightened out of my wits as one would suspect. Rather, a comforting feeling came over me. By the way, When I first called out to them, the other man ran into the woods. All of this I merely attributed to suggestive thinking. Thinking I saw things that I imagined and so forth. Perhaps it was a restless walk late at night and so forth. About a month ago, I was visiting my sister and her family at their house miles away. Her daughter also had an old message board that her father found years ago in the attic of an old school that he once worked at. The planchette was missing, so for fun, I went to work in his wood shop and made a really nice wooden one for them. With her and her boyfriend at the board, I asked, "Anna, are you here?" "Hi, Rick," the board replied. This really freaked them out. "Tell us the story that you told me the last time we spoke," I asked. Again, the same information from a year before came through. I didn't reveal any of the prior things that Anna said to anyone there, but there was again the same. She said that I did see her once, and that she and her uncles did visit my son. I did not ask any of this once the planchette began to move. She just went on and on and on. I asked her if she liked what I did with the old house. It still looks as it did in the 30s, except for the addition of electricity and plumbing, and she said that she felt right at home. I asked her if she ever entered the house, and she said, "No. Bad memories." Lately at night, through the corner of my eye, my son as well, I have seen someone fleeting past the kitchen window. Even our dog sends an alert that somebody's here, when in fact there isn't. The last time I used the board, being a skeptic, I always have someone else use it. She said she wanted to meet me along the edge of the field at 1 o'clock in the morning. "Promise?" I asked. "I promise," she answered. I never bothered. I'm not sure if I believe in such things, but it is fun to think about. Perhaps it's true. Then, a few months later, Anna, it turned out, is haunting the people living in the trailer house, even though I've never shared this story with them. Denise and her friends have seen her as well. She's still alone and longing for whatever she's looking for. They're not afraid of her. They find her sweet and comforting, just like the child she was in life. They've actually adopted her, and she at times visits my old house, and we chat with her on my antique Ouija board. Next story. My ex-husband Jamie and I used to live with his dad. We were always told that this house was haunted. There have been numerous things happen to a number of different people, and this is my story. Every morning, Jamie would get up to go to work, and our room was in the upstairs of the house, and he would wake me up so I could go downstairs and get in bed with his sister. I was too afraid to sleep upstairs by myself because of all the stories I heard. Before Jamie would leave for work, he would come into his sister's room and give me a kiss goodbye. I would have to raise my hand up to show him which side of the bed I was on. On this particular morning, everything went the way it always had. Jamie woke me up. I went downstairs and climbed in bed. He came in before he left, just to give me that goodbye kiss like he always did. I raised my hand so he knew which side of the bed I was on. He gave me a kiss and left. Later that morning, I woke up to see my sister-in-law standing at the foot of the bed folding clothes. I noticed that her side of the bed was made. I asked her why she didn't wait for me to get out of bed so that she could make the whole bed at once. She said that the bed was made from the night before because she didn't sleep there that night. She had slept with her dad because she was scared. I thought she was joking around with me or playing some kind of trick. However, her dad confirmed that she slept in his room all night. I told him that someone had to be in the bed with me. I know this because our feet even touched, and Jamie had me raise my hand to show which side I was on. When Jamie got home that night, I told him about what had happened. We still, to this day, do not know who or what was in bed with me, but we do know something or someone was there. Next story. Years ago, in the late 70s, on the outskirts of Rocky Mount, North Carolina, down West Mount Drive, not too far from the Four Corners store. Some call this area Sandy Crossroads. Me and my family used to live there in a very old house. It's a very peaceful place in the day, but at night, you would think that all the devils in hell had broken loose in our house. I can't even think of just one night of having a good night's sleep in that house. Growing up as a child was very hard, because I was born, or should I say blessed, with a spiritual eyesight and could see spirits any time of day or night. And I felt that somehow they're drawn to me because everywhere I go, somehow I always seem to run into one, and they're always lurking and peeping around corners. Every night in that house was hell for me because there was always some crazy sounds of something in the loft that night. And in the kitchen, it would sound as though something was jumping from the loft onto the floor. That was annoying to me. One night, I heard the sound, and I went to see if I could see anything, just to see a black cat sitting on the table. The thing, though, was we didn't own one, and that scared me to death. I ran off screaming, telling my parents about the cat in the kitchen. They thought I was telling a tale. The sound of someone jumping from the loft in the kitchen went on every night when everyone else was sleeping. Some nights I would go to bed early because I knew that when everyone else went to sleep, I was always the one that couldn't sleep, and I liked getting my nap first at night. It seemed like my sixth sense would kick in, my spiritual eyes would open up. The last night I can remember in this creepy old house was me seeing the black cat jumping from the loft and seeing it walk slowly to my room. I remember being scared and covering my head and seeing the cat leapt onto the bed I was in. Looking at him through the sheets, in other words, seeing his shadow, began to shake with fear. The cat jumped back down to the floor. I thought it was over, just for the cat to transform into a skinny old man with one of those old pot hats on. You know, the old long ones? I can remember shaking even more as my teeth began to knock and covered my head again, just for this man to come stand over me, fondling and tickling my body from the other side of the sheet. I began to wet the bed. All I can remember was blacking out and waking up the next day scared. That was the last night spent on West Mount Drive in Rocky Mount. Next story. In a small community in Lewis County stands a small cottage home that dates back well beyond 1935. I bought the property in April of 2001, not knowing the home was haunted. I've always believed in ghosts, but I never guessed my home to be haunted. Boy, was I wrong. Many times after moving in late at night, I could hear what sounded to be a female's voice, and at times it was a man's. I was never sure what was being said. One morning I was awakened by the bedroom door to where I was sleeping opening and slamming shut. Time moved on, and many things happened. I got married. My wife was awakened to the blankets jerked off of her. It was almost like they didn't like her and waited for me to leave for work before they did what they did. She was knocked down many times and hit on, slapped, and her hair would get pulled. A young female apparition started appearing many places in the house, sometimes appearing solid as me and sometimes transparent. I decided to try to record any phenomena I could get. During the time of the recording, I got a young girl saying, "I lost something in Montica." An older lady saying that a man that lives upstairs is a hard nose. Keep in mind, it's only a single-story home. Who these people are, I haven't a clue. After hearing the EVPs, I decided to look in the attic for any clues to anything that had been happening. Well, lo and behold, I found a room that I was not aware of existed. I opened the door, and it was only big enough for a small cot and room to walk by it. So I assumed this may be where the man the older lady was referring to stays. The only one to ever see this old man was my daughter. She described him as being short, bent over, and mean-looking. The house sits empty, still yet to this day. Many sounds and gray, gloomy shadows still hover over my Wright Street cottage home. Next story. I was brought up in the suburbs of Columbia, South Carolina in the 70s and 80s. Not a whole lot of spooky stuff going on, but I would like to share what I do remember and recollect now as an adult. I grew up in Irmo, South Carolina, in a middle-class neighborhood that was just wonderful. We had a large colonial house that sat on pond front property. My family were the second owners of the house. Nothing really happened with the original owners, nothing that would cause a haunting. My earliest memories of something being strange or off-kilter were my experiences in the upstairs bathroom that my sister, brother, and I used. Many times, I would be taking a shower and feel something watching me. I was scared to soap up my hair in fear that I could not see it. I never saw anything, but things would move from one place to another in the bathroom during these showers. I knew something was going on, but didn't know what. I thought at first that my siblings were playing tricks on me. I thought that my missing removed clothes were the antics because of them. I found out one night that this was just not true. The season was summer and my family was a local swim meet. My older brother and younger sister swam on the team. Not my thing in those days. I wanted to fish, and fish I did. I came home to an empty house. The others were at the meet. Here I was, dirty as you can imagine. I had mud all over my legs and on the shorts I was wearing. I kicked off my shoes downstairs in the mudroom, as Mom called it. This is where you put your dirty mud shoes when entering the house so as not to track it around. From here, I headed upstairs to get a shower. Nothing strange. Not yet. I walked into the bathroom, took off my shorts, and laid them on a seat beneath a small window that looked over the backyard. I started the shower and got in. I must admit that the feeling at the time was making my nerves crawl, but I ignored it. The warm water was refreshing, and the soap smelled good, as usual. Back then, Mom brought Prel to wash our hair with. I cleaned all the dirt off myself and then washed again, knowing how it would not be gone after the first wash. Feeling clean and tired, turned off the water and pulled back the shower curtain. To my amazement, my clothes had been moved. My shirt was on the floor and obviously moved from the chair. I grabbed a towel and got out of the shower, curious as to what happened. The bathroom door was open, and a small trail of mud led out from the tile work of the bathroom to the hallway. Keep in mind, this is not a small bathroom. Two sinks and a large toilet area. I dried off and walked slowly out into the hallway. I looked to my left. Nothing out of the usual. I looked to my right and saw a muddy trail all the way down the wall to the bottom of the stairs. At the bottom, of course, were my shorts. It was as if someone had held my muddy shorts at arm level on the wall and walked all the way downstairs with them, leaving the trail behind. This would normally freak anyone out, but what did I do? I freaked out knowing Mom was coming home soon, and I would get my rear end worn out if I didn't get this cleaned up. I did my best to get the red mud streaks out of the wallpaper, but was unsuccessful. I was even more unsuccessful explaining the whole thing to Mom and Dad, as I'm sure you can imagine. This was but one experience in this strange house. Next story. In the early 1950s in the city of Nashua, New Hampshire, there was an incident at the Black Bridge, which was located on a stretch of railroad tracks not far from the Hudson Bridge, which is the next town over. My great-grandmother, who lived directly across from the tracks, was present when a train derailed and crashed into a nearby building. The bridge was partially torn to pieces, and many people died, and almost all who lived were scarred for life. My great-grandmother told my father, when he was very young, that some of the passengers crossed the field to her house. Being a kindly woman, she did not turn them away and help them. One man, according to great-granny, had the skin of his back missing, but she said that he was in such tremendous shock that he didn't seem to be aware of it. Sadly, many children perished in the wreck. Many years later, me and my family lived on the street that runs down a long hill and comes to a stop at the Black Bridge. Me and my friends named it that because it was as black as pitch. To this day, the laughter of young children can be heard, as though they are playing under the bridge, but nobody is ever seen. Apparitions and the ghosts of suicides haunt the area as well. Go to the bottom of Lock Street, and you will find out for yourself. Next story. A few years ago, me and three of my schoolmates went to a little farmhouse owned by my grandfather's friend near a town called Paroa. It was quite a new house, actually. Nothing looked creepy about it. A day after we got to the house, we decided to help the old guy out on his farm. At lunchtime, he told us a story about wars between the Europeans and the native Maori tribes, which took place right in the land where the old guy's house was. The story sounded pretty boring, but he told us that a lot of people died at that very spot. Then he told us how he always saw a little kid running around his crops at night, vandalizing his crops with a stick. He thought that the kid had a mental disorder because the kid didn't even care about three full-grown farm dogs barking at him. He got very upset with the kid. This time, the kid was just a few meters away from his front gate, standing close to one of the dogs that was tied up with a chain. He studied the kid for a long time, looking at him from the window. He noticed that he was looking right into the dog's eye while the dog was barking, and the kid didn't even back off or blink. So the old guy decided to step out of the front door and chase the kid away. The door was just a few steps away. As soon as he stepped out of the door and looked to the gate, there was no sign of the kid, but the dog was still barking. The old man was amazed. We decided to walk around the farm for the whole next day, just to see if we could find something. That night, me and one of my friends, we were both sitting out on the front porch while the other two were sleeping on the couches and the old man was sitting on the dining table and having a whiskey. It was about 8:30 p.m. when me and my mate got bored and started playing around on our laptops. Suddenly, I started hearing someone walking on the roof. I could hear the bending of tin sheets that were screwed on the roof. We got pretty scared because everyone was inside and sleeping except for us two. As soon as I got out of my chair to see what was on the roof, I heard a big thud on the ground, which sounded like breaking bones. We both got alarmed by the sound and turned around, and we couldn't believe our eyes. We saw the same kid lying on the ground. He looked just like a normal person. Besides, we couldn't see well at night, but I did notice that he was wearing dark-colored dungarees and a white shirt. We totally forgot about what the old man told us about the little kid, so we quickly jumped off the porch to see if he was okay. My mate was pulling my arm because he didn't feel right about this. I turned back and told him to stop fooling around, and when I turned back within a second, we saw the kid was standing up like nothing had happened, but half of his face was covered in blood. We didn't think for a second and ran back up to the porch in terror. We ran into the house and didn't dare to look out the window, but finally we decided to. The little kid was standing there pulling an innocent face, and the next moment, he ran across the backyard at an extraordinary speed. It was hardly a second he was out of there. After that, me and my mate couldn't talk, but we drank heaps of water, and we didn't sleep because we were in such a panic. We just sat on one of the couches and switched on the TV, trying very hard to get that sight of horror out of our heads. At about 3 a.m, the old man woke up. He walked over to us still in his hangover and asked us, "So, found anything yet?" I managed to laugh faintly and told the guy that you wouldn't believe it. Then we told him what we saw and described what the kid looked like. He was pretty concerned and shocked at the same time and told us kindly to leave the next morning. So we did. We didn't tell the other two smart-ass mates who were sleeping last night because they wouldn't have believed us anyway. And it took us at least a couple of days to get back to normal. And by then, we had left that strange farm.